Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte clear liners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you could pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Hey guys, I'd like to take a second to shout out the network that helps distribute our show, Armchair Media. Armchair is a collection of 50 plus podcasts, including ours, trying to localize the sports world a bit more. We've been with them for, I don't know, like 6 months or so, but we have really enjoyed working with Andrew and the rest of the team. Saints Happy Hour podcast, you guys have heard us talk about them in the past, but starting June 1st, Bet Online will serve as the title sponsor for Armchair Network, as well as our show. Pretty cool, right? Gone are the days of mowing our respective lawns. Now we are on to online sports gambling. So I guess that's a step forward. Also, I want to shout out the Nine Club. It's the world's largest skateboarding podcast, hosted by professional skaters Chris Roberts and Kelly Hart. Perhaps Kevin knows who they are. You can follow them at the Nine Club. To see all things Armchair, search Armchair Media wherever you get your pods, and make sure to check out Armchair's website, ArmchairMediaNetwork.com.
You are listening to The Bird Calls on the Armchair All-American Network. For more on your Pelicans, go to iTunes, search The Bird Calls, and subscribe today.
Welcome to another episode of the Bird Calls podcast. I'm your host and contributor to both thebirdwrites.com as well as Bleacher Report, Preston Ellis. And today, we've got the man who, if he was paid in radio spots, would be quite a rich man, Mr. Ali Cosell. What's going on, dude?
What's up, Preston? Yeah, it's been a busy Tuesday. There's a lot to talk about NBA related, even though we don't even know if we're going to have a season yet.
Yeah, before anybody finishes this podcast, this is probably bad advice given that this is our podcast, make sure you listen to Low Podcast, because there's a lot involved there about Kevin O'Connor's recent piece with The Ringer, just several different solutions floating in the air. To help us talk about that, we've got friend to the program, Mr. Harrison Fagan. This is probably like your third or fourth time on the pod. How are you, sir?
Is it that many? Okay, wow. I'm doing, you know, like I said, I'm doing as well as I think anybody can be. I appreciate you guys having me back on during these like crazy times. And yeah, it's nice to be getting to talk about like basketball again after, you know, like there was a while there where, I mean, it still might not come back, but it really seemed like it was really, really unlikely. And now it seems like there's at least a possibility. And like how safe all of this is going to be, I think that there's still, you know, is like open for debate, but like I'm excited to like have basketball back on our televisions.
Yeah, it definitely seems like we're getting closer and closer. Woj just reported yesterday, and a variety of different sources have reported that Walt Disney World's going to be the landing spot. It's going to be sometime around July 25th to September 20th, according to Bill Simmons, for the playoff structure. If they do some kind of tournament or regular season games, what have you, it would have to happen before that. So everything needs to start happening pretty quickly, Ali, because we've still got half of the Pelicans franchise that are out of town. Some players that are overseas right now that all need to come back at some point to start these training camps. Let's go ahead and dive in. We're talking about Zach Lowe's podcast today with Adrian Wojnarowski. I've only listened to part one. I'll start with Ali, and then we can kind of do this co-host thing where we both just kind of double team on Harrison Fagan. Talk about the viability of this 20-team group format that Kevin O'Connor pitched. I'll break it down really quickly. The four top seeds would be the starter of every group, and then they could potentially select what other four teams they'd like in their group, or you could disperse it kind of evenly just at random as best you can. Each of those groups would play each other twice. Whatever two teams win the most games and tiebreakers are inflicted via your regular season record, those eight teams would automatically advance to the semifinals or round two of the playoffs. That's an idea that Kevin O'Connor pitched today. Ali, what were your initial thoughts on this?
Wishful thinking. Yeah. I mean, I'll be honest. If you're LeBron James, if you're any of these top teams and any of the players on them, why would you want to subject yourself to possibly really not even getting into the meat of the playoffs where you participate in this group stage and only two teams advance, right, out of five? and you're even going up against teams that are currently, by the current standings, outside of the playoff picture, suddenly you have a threat because anything can happen in very limited amount of games, right? Each team can either be hot, you know, maybe some kind of injury crops up, who knows? But anyways, when you already got a one or two seed locked up by the regular format, I just don't see why, like I said, the Lakers, Bucks, really almost any team that's already inside the playoffs be willing to say, yeah, let's go for this group stage to where, yeah, we don't care that it suddenly is made tougher for us to even possibly advance just to the next round. I just don't see it, even though I think it would be great entertainment. There's no doubt the World Cup of soccer is one of the most watched television events, if not maybe the number one sporting event in all the world.
Now, Harrison, if you want to comment on that one, you can. However, I'm going to pitch to you the 1 through 16 seeding format that was pitched yesterday by Brian Windhorst, in addition to, I think Woj was the other one who was breaking the news on the possible consideration of the Lakers thereby avoiding both the Milwaukee Bucks and the Los Angeles Clippers on their side of the bracket. They would meet the victor of those two teams in the NBA Finals. There's a lot of talk of all these different formats being thrown out there. How viable do you think any of this is? Are we just wasting time talking about it? And should we just focus on the traditional format as it would have been on March 11th or whenever the last day of the season was?
I mean, I'm fine with them like trying to figure out if there's like a better way to do this. And like, especially if it's experimenting with a way that they're considering doing anyway, and they kind of want to see the viability of it in like an environment when there's no travel or whatever. But if it's just going to be for just this year, then I think that it's kind of like a waste of time. And it makes a postseason. A lot of people have already said this, but it kind of makes a postseason that a lot of people are already going to want to put an asterisk on. Like it makes it more asterisky. Because they, like, if
I like that term,
yeah, I mean, I guess it's almost like it almost works in like two ways because you got the risky at the end. I didn't even intend that, but like, yeah, I think that it just like it makes it all seem a little bit more gimmicky in a year that some people are already going to consider a gimmick. And so I think that would be maybe the concern there. I think Ollie, you also make a good point about like the why would the playoff teams go for this group stage thing and have a chance to get eliminated when they're like kind of already in? And that may be something that the NBA runs into where like the playoff teams are, whether you're including every single team in the NBA or you're just including like these fringe playoff teams like the Pelicans and, you know, the Blazers and like these teams that were kind of close, but they weren't within the top eight seeds. Like if you're including them, like they're just them, they're massively outnumbered by the playoff teams. And so they would be like outvoted in that way. Like I know, like I would actually enjoy the group stage thing, like especially if these top seeds actually were picking the other teams in their groups. Like I think that would be great TV. I would actually love to watch like a selection show of that, although the NBA would probably never give it to us, but it would be awesome to watch like LeBron and Anthony Davis sit there and like pick the other three teams in their group, or draft them along with like representatives from other teams. But I highly doubt we'd get that. We aren't like, I think for whatever reason, the NBA hates showing us that stuff, as we've seen with the All-Star draft. But I know a lot of Lakers fans were excited about the idea of the reseeding thing, because the way that the brackets are right now, where if they were just to reseed 1 through 16, like the Lakers wouldn't have to play, I think, either the Clippers or the Bucks until the finals, and like then those two teams would have to fight their way through each other potentially. And the Lakers like did not have that difficult of a path to the postseason with the way that things broke down right now with that reseeding. So I know a lot of Lakers fans would get behind that, but just like philosophically, like I think it's only really worth doing if it's something that the NBA is going to consider doing anyway, because otherwise, like, why make it more gimmicky right now?
You said, Harrison, that you would enjoy, like, say, this world stage type of idea from a fan perspective. But you personally, what do you think, just you alone, doesn't have to be, like, say, from the Lakers perspective or anything, but what would you truly like to see happen? Because you do cover the Los Angeles Lakers. Would you want to just stick with a traditional format? Or do you really have some other scenario out there that you put number one?
I mean, if it's just in a vacuum and we're just like getting to watch like whatever we personally would like to watch with no consideration for like the long-term effects of that or anything like that or the perception of it, like I would honestly enjoy seeing the group stage thing. I think that that would be like fun, especially if like the teams did actually get to pick their opponents. I think that would be interesting. And I think that that would be something that would be fun for long-term as well, if the NBA could find a way to make it work. But I just don't think that they'll do it like that. They'd like, I have my doubts that they'd extend it past this year and that like teams would be willing to actually do that, because all of a sudden then that puts like a bullseye on you that you said that you wanted to face this team. And that's like bulletin board material for them immediately. So like, I'm not sure that that'll ever actually work, but like, you know, it's interesting that they're thinking about it. And like, that's probably what I personally would be most interested to watch.
Yeah, I think we'd have to question the long-term viability of that, because that does put the importance on being one of those top four seeds. But in terms of being the other seeds, you know, 3 through potentially 20, it's not as significant anymore for you to turn out to be a fifth seed versus a 10th seed, because at the end of the day, you're being selected to a slot anyway. So I think that just diminishes the regular season a little bit. However, getting one of those top four seeds all of a sudden becomes critical. Harrison, just from the point of view of the Lakers, who potentially would have to face the victor of this four-team play-in tournament that right now is possessed by the Memphis Grizzlies, you've got the Sacramento Kings, the San Antonio Spurs, the Portland Trail Blazers, the New Orleans Pelicans, all five of these teams that somewhat have a claim to that position. What are your thoughts on that revolving door, that play-in tournament? Does it matter to Lakers fans?
You know, to be honest, like I don't think that it matters a whole lot. Like, I kind of doubt that it matters a whole lot to the Lakers either. Like, and those teams are not like teams that they've struggled with, and they've been really good this year. I mean, obviously, I think that especially since they're going to be coming back from like a long layoff, and, you know, it sounds like we might get a couple of regular season games where like every team, all these teams get tuned up a little bit. So maybe it's not like you're just coming in cold after these teams are coming in off like a play-in tournament. But if that were to happen, then all of a sudden it's like, okay, like, are the Lakers going to be rusty against one of these teams or whatever? But to be honest, like in a vacuum, I don't think that the opponent matters a whole lot to them. I think like, I think the Lakers like would and should feel pretty confident that they'd beat any of those teams. And I know that that's not going to be a popular thing to say on the Pelicans podcast. They may be the most threatening, but to be honest, I don't know. Like, the Lakers have kind of handled them like pretty well this year. But you know, like, Zion's been really good, and so who knows like what can happen in the playoffs. I just don't think that the Lakers would be very worried about any of those teams.
Well, you disappoint me, because I was hoping there was a little bit of juice. Maybe, you know, everybody would want to see AD go up against his old team. And of course, you know, Lakers fans, there's still a lot that, of course, you know, Harrison, that follow Lonzo Ball, Brandon Ingram. They're going to be lifelong friends of theirs. So I would have thought that maybe you would have leaned towards New Orleans, but it's understandable. But listen, let's move on to maybe talking about the Anthony Davis trade, right? We're about now almost a year removed, and it's interesting to see how it play out. So I'm going to start off with this question. I'm sure Preston's got others, but now looking back, now that we have gone through a pandemic where, you know, we don't know how this season is going to play out, but do you have any kind of buyer's remorse on behalf of the Lakers on accepting the deal, especially now seeing how Lonzo Ball has really taken the next step? Brandon Ingram made his first All-Star game and such.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think the Lakers do, because, you know, you just go back to the last question. Like, we were talking about, like, this is a team that's confident that they could beat, like, any of these teams fairly handily in a first-round series. They've been by far the best team in the West, like, in terms of record this year. I think they're, like, 5 games or so ahead of the Clippers at this point. Like, their second-best record in the NBA. Like, they've been really, really good. And, like, was that a super steep price to give up for Anthony Davis? Like, yes. But I think everybody knew that it was going to be a steep price at the time. Like, and honestly, like, in the end, they ended up giving up, you know, if you don't account for that, their first round pick jumping up in value, they ended up, if you go back to like some of the rumored trade proposals at the deadline, they ended up giving up like a little bit less, not much, but a little bit, than was proposed at the deadline. And like, I think for Lakers fans, and probably for the Lakers as well, like, I think they all had high opinions of these young players. Like, I think all of us thought that Brandon, and like, we were trying to tell the people at the Bird Rights, like, this is not a flaming dumpster fire, like, this trade offer. It is, like, these players are good, and they haven't really had, they're developing, and they aren't flawless, but, like, you've seen Lonzo Ball develop this year. I'm like, I'm not sure, honestly, offhand, like, what kind of year Josh Hart has had, but we felt like he could be a good contributor. We all, like, felt like that Brandon Ingram could be an all-star level player at some point in his career. And, you know, he's really flourished this year, and, like, really showed that he could do that once he was kind of, like, away from LeBron and was able to have this kind of more ball-dominant, more featured role than he got with the Lakers. And, you know, was able to take, like, another year forward in growth as well. And, like, all these these guys, they just got another year older and started to develop more and had more opportunities. So like, I don't think that anyone is incredibly surprised by them being like really good this year. And so I don't think that there's any buyer's remorse, not because of that, like because we knew that they'd be good, but also because like Anthony Davis has been such a perfect fit here and because the Lakers have been so good. I mean, obviously, if they don't get to finish the season and like, let's just say like darkest timeline, they don't finish the season or like they lose in the first round of the playoffs or something, Anthony Davis leaves, then like, yeah, they gave up too much and that wasn't worth it. But if Anthony Davis stays and he stays relatively healthy and the Lakers stay at like, maybe not this level or around this level, but like they stay pretty good, then I think that it's going to be tough to say, like, as long as LeBron doesn't decline too much, that they gave up too much. Like, I think this is one of those rare trades where it was kind of a win-win.
Yeah, absolutely. You mentioned the original iterations of the trade, and I think that at least in one iteration of the trade, Zubats was included, and then he got dealt for pennies on the dollar near the. It was some big shooting guy. You'll remember his name offhand better than
Muscala.
I do.
Yeah.
Yes, Mike Muscala. Oh my God, that was originally part of the trade. The Pelicans.
The unforgettable Mike Muscala. You know, Magic Johnson's key trade deadline acquisition that was gonna save the Lakers with his spacing, and then you know did not do that.
Oh man, he could have possibly been in place of Derek Favors this season. It's difficult to be able to fathom or wrap your brain around what that might have looked like. Let's continue along the same dialogue, because when we talked to you last year, we mentioned how the value of these Lakers players was at an all-time low. Of course, you had the thrombosis suffer to Brandon Ingram that could have potentially sidelined him for the remainder of his career. Nobody knew how severe it was going to be. You had Lonzo Ball, who had missed, I think, 62 games in his first two seasons, those lingering ankle problems, LeVar Ball following him, you know, seemingly everywhere he went, big baller brand and the distractions that come with that. Of course, Josh Hart looked like a promising young player, but he had a bit of inconsistency to himself. Now, fast forward, you see how good all of these guys have become, as you just mentioned, and it looks really good from the Pelicans' point of view. And you mentioned what a perfect fit that Anthony Davis has been in Los Angeles. It's been, like you said, a trade that worked out for both parties. How different do you think the trade would have been if the trade had potentially happened this season? Because Anthony Davis, of course, wanted to dictate his way out at the trade deadline last year. And that was the worst possible time for the Lakers because of all those shortcomings that were suffered to Ingram and Lonzo Ball.
Yeah, it's interesting to think about, because like if they hadn't gotten that trade done, like who knows what they would have done in free agency? Who knows what happens with that first round pick? I mean, Anthony Davis's value would obviously be like a little bit lower, I think, now, because, you know, you're just contractually, you're only getting him for half a year or something. And so like, if they're making the trade now, they probably would have had to give up less, but they also probably would have had less to give up. Who knows if they would have had the cap space to make the deal work like mid-season, or would have been able to work out a trade package. Like, there's all these reasons why it was, I think, better and it behooved them. And, you know, I think David Griffin negotiated really hard for like saying the same thing. Like, there were a lot of reasons why it was better for them to get the trade done then. And especially back then, like in hindsight, when they felt like they had a chance at Kawhi Leonard. And so of course you want to get that deal done then, and that like forces gives you a little bit more I think motivation to get it done more quickly and make sure that that's in place when you feel like you have a chance to put together like that big three. Obviously that didn't happen, but that was, I think, part of the thought process of like, let's get this done now and get it done in a way that gives us the cap space to go after, you know, Kawhi Leonard or superstar X or whoever. And that didn't happen, but I think that that was a motivating factor for them then. And like if it was getting done now, I don't know, like, because it's like you said, all these guys were a little bit of distressed assets, like especially by the time the trade got done. Like at the deadline, they were all healthy and playing, if I remember correctly. But it was only after the deadline, I think, that the health issues really started to hit. And like, if Lonzo and like Ingram had played, you know, maybe not as well as they've played this year, but kind of close to it, because they probably wouldn't have had as many opportunities. Like, maybe it's all of a sudden it's like Kyle Kuzma in the deal instead of one of those guys. Or, you know, it's like Josh Hart is not in the deal and it's some other like throw in to make salary work, or, you know, what that pick like does not end up going to New Orleans. Because obviously, I think I don't know if you guys agree, but I feel like it definitely would have been less at the trade deadline this year, just because AD, you would have been getting less time with him. You wouldn't have been getting a training camp with him. Like, there's just less reason to deal for him at that point. When you at that point, it's only 6 months out till free agency. or at least at the trade deadline, you would have thought that. Who knows when free agency will actually take place?
Yeah, I think you make a great point, because if they wait until this year, who's to say Anthony Davis would have been still happy? I mean, what kind of buttons Rich Paul would have pushed? But I think more so, look at maybe how different the Lakers would have played. And after seeing the improvements of B.I. and Lonzo and the key contributions of Josh Hart, maybe the Lakers wouldn't have been even really entertaining the idea of trading, of making this trade, right? Harrison, because let's say AD, hey, he can walk basically out of New Orleans soon. So why give up all those assets? Kind of the thinking Magic used to have with Paul George with the Indiana Pacers. And should he trade for him, or should he just wait till free agency? So yeah, it's real interesting to ponder. That's why I was kind of curious on your thoughts on really how do you and other Lakers just basically feel about, you know, giving up so much good talent? Because I'm shocked. I did not foresee Brandon Ingram, Lonzo having the kind of years basically where all the Lakers contribute. Because we all thought at the time of the trade that the key was, of course, all the future picks, right? Whether it was actual Lakers picks or being able to flip for the better pick in future years. But now it looks like, of course, the cream of that trade is B.I. and Lonzo. So I guess my question is, if you had to basically say, I mean, I kind of asked it before, but I still feel like, Harrison, that the Lakers would be in better position had they not made that trade, right? I think they did give up too much. So
I think in a vacuum, they did give up too much. Like it's, you know, like if you're just looking strictly at the situation, like as far as when Anthony Davis was going to be a free agent, what they gave up, all that stuff. Like, I think that like now with hindsight being 2020, it's like kind of easy to say that. But it's interesting that you bring up Paul George, because I think that that's exactly who I was going to bring up when you said this was, like, we don't know that Anthony Davis doesn't then get upset and not want to play for the Lakers anymore, or get, like, you know, eyes for another team if he doesn't feel wanted. Like, we know that that's what happened with Paul George and the Lakers, is he said, you know, hey, like, the Thunder went out and got me. Like, I don't owe the Lakers anything, and I like it here. And, you know, he only ended up staying for another year and then forcing his way to the Clippers. But, like, he was someone that was able to be swayed into staying somewhere else. And who's to say that that doesn't happen with Anthony Davis? I obviously, back before the trade was made, he was kind of talking, like, him and Rich Paul were talking a big game about, like, not really wanting to play for anyone but the Lakers. But does that stance change if it looks like things are going pretty well in LA? And, like, consequently, like, do Lonzo Ball and Brandon Ingram have this good of years with the Lakers? Like, I'm not sure that they would have, because I think that we saw a little bit of how that movie played out last year. Like, I'm confident they would have been better, but I don't know that they would have been and shown as much as they have this year. And so I don't know, like, it might have been a situation where instead of trying to hang on to these guys and, like, keep them for and keep as much as you can and then go get Anthony Davis in free agency, it's all of a sudden like, oh, well, okay, LeBron's unhappy because they stood pat and they didn't get anything done in free agency, and like they aren't that much better than they were last year. And then all of a sudden these guys have another kind of year attached to them of being like distressed assets. And so, like, I don't think that it's a guarantee that they would have played like this had they remained Lakers. I mean, again, like, obviously they showed promise here, but, like, they're now finally delivering on those promises. And I'm not sure that they would have had enough opportunity to do that in L.A. with LeBron playing such a big role. I mean, Lonzo on this specific team, like, if they had managed to keep him in the trade, I think would have helped. Ingram obviously would have helped. I just don't think that their numbers would be quite as good, or that their impact would be as outsized in smaller roles.
Yeah, for sure. It's a perfect fit with Anthony Davis there because he's one of the game's best finishers. He can create on his own, but Brandon Ingram kind of needs the ball in his hands. Yeah. Lonzo Ball kind of needs the ball in his hands. So it worked out great. I want to continue on this line of thought. I'm sorry for banging over your head with, did the Lakers give up too much? But I do want to follow up with one last question. The term clutch kind of leaves a sour taste in Pelicans fans for understandable reasons. Number one, you've got agent Rich Paul of Clutch Sports, but also the Pelicans perform so poorly in the clutch. So it's got a variety of different concerns with us. But just in terms of the way that everything unfolded, of course, Pelicans fans, maybe Lakers fans even too at this point, might have preferred that he had not made that very public demand, not had come out and said, you know, we're not going to re-sign in Boston if we get traded there, because it created bad blood between the two franchises. And I remember Alvin Gentry having a quote saying something to the point of fact of, I've never seen anything like this take place. You know, guys from front offices being removed because of a trade demand with Magic Johnson and Dell Demps in that regard. If Rich Paul would have just waited until the summer, maybe that asking price isn't so much, because as Andrew Lopez reported, that the Pelicans wanted to put a kind of tax on Rob Pelinka because they were so distasted with the way that everything transpired. If that trade demand on January 28th does not take place, do you think the trade looks any different?
I honestly don't, because I think that, like, I, to me, honestly, like, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, I felt like the biggest thing that was like a problem from that was more of like the way that Magic Johnson kind of handled negotiations, where he was just basically like giving out, like, I mean, we all saw what the original like reported trade offers were. Like, I think I remember one of them was like Lance Stevenson and Rondo, and like, I for like, it was just like random, like, kind of, you know, for lack of a better term, it was like, it was roster filler. And like, I think he was almost acting like, I can negotiate and like, I have the leverage here and I can force this on you. And then when you combine that with Anthony Davis is kind of force it, trying to force his way out, like, I think that that is what ultimately made things that bad. Like, I mean, to be honest, like, I think Lakers fans loved it when Anthony Davis's dad came out and said, we'd never play for the Celtics, and like tried to, you know, obviously that was more of an attempt to kind of like hurt the Pelicans' leverage than it was to appeal to Lakers fans. But I mean, it ended up doing both. Like, I think like everyone loved that because, you know, obviously Lakers fans hate the Celtics. You know, it's possible that maybe there wouldn't have been that clutch tax, but to me that obviously felt like posturing. Like, I think that they, you know, David Griffin is going to go for as much as he can get in a trade either way. And, you know, maybe by not having other suitors, like, who's to say that that didn't drive the market down a little bit and didn't require the Lakers to give up like even a little bit more, like throw Kyle Kuzma in the deal or something like that. I mean, obviously he hasn't had the best year, but he was like, considered viewed a lot more highly last summer. And they managed to keep him out of the deal. Like, I think if there are other suitors in there driving the price up, like, there's a possibility that they would have had to give up more. So no, I don't think that like any like Lakers fans are really upset about the way that Rich Paul handled that. It got Anthony Davis here in time for like an extra season, basically, instead of having to do it at the trade deadline this year or wait another year towards free agency. It got LeBron some help. It's led to the best Lakers season in like a decade. Like, I don't think that anybody's complaining. Like, I mean, I know obviously like the young guys are great, and I was like banging that drum as much as anyone. Like, I felt like the price was steep when they made the trade, but I think wrote at the time, like, this is what you do to trade for a superstar. And Anthony Davis is not a traditional superstar in that he does kind of like, he is at his best when he has somebody setting him up, but the Lakers have like the perfect partner for him and LeBron, and their synergy has been incredible. And like, it's led to the most fun season that I've ever covered. And so I don't think that anybody would really trade how it went down, even if, like, you know, maybe process wise there are a couple things that you could tweak, but ultimately it ended up with AD here in time for this season.
Yeah, that's a good answer. I've watched plenty of those Laker games, and I'll tell you what, yeah, I've never seen Anthony Davis shine so much because of the fact that he's got LeBron James standing next to him. It's not just the on-the-court player. You can also tell through his emotions. He's taken a bigger step in leadership. You know, he's been more vocal. I don't recall him doing that often in New Orleans. He would really have to get riled up to speak out, I remember. But listen, we're going to just do one more question on it. Alternate reality. You know, this is total fantasy, but if you could pick one asset from that trade that you wish the Lakers would have kept, who would it be? Whether it's Lonzo, B.I., Josh, or maybe one of the future picks.
Oh, this is tough for me because, like, I am probably as big of a Lonzo believer as there is other than LaVar Ball. And so, like, you know, I really want to say Lonzo, but it's hard with how well Brandon Ingram has played this year to not say him. Like, even though obviously he would not be putting up the numbers that he's putting up in New Orleans if the Lakers had managed to hang on to him, like, he still, like, he would have immediately solved their secondary ball handler problem, and like, he would have been way overqualified for that role, but he also would have, you know, been amazing at it. And he just would have given them like another dribble, like another threat off the dribble, another threat to play make, another threat to score that they just don't really have outside of LeBron. Like they have a lot of secondary guys, but they've had to try and kind of use Rondo in that role this year. They signed Deion Waiters as like a break glass in case of emergency guy now. But for the most part, like they've struggled when LeBron is not in the game, and that got a little bit better before the season shut down. They had started to figure some things out, but it's still not perfect. And Brandon Ingram would have completely solved that problem. Like, again, he would have been way overqualified for the role. Like, he probably would have left after this year, at least tried to in restricted free agency because he would have wanted a bigger role. But, like, I think Ingram, like, if you're looking at a way to make the Lakers, like, go from one of the title, like, contenders to, like, title favorites, like, I think Ingram would have done that.
All right, I'm going to ask one more and then I'll let you get out of here. Just in terms of what's on the line for the Los Angeles Lakers this year, obviously LeBron's 35. I think he turns 36 this year. He was very vocal about wanting to continue the season when that question was posed to him. Obviously, Anthony Davis is still technically an unrestricted free agent. None of us expect that he would walk after all this. Can you imagine how hilarious that would be after everything that's transpired in the last year if he then ultimately walked after
hilarious
all?
Hilarious is not the word I would use.
just in terms of the drama surrounding some kind of move like that, none of us expect that. Maybe if there's a grouping and they get eliminated in the first round, maybe he considers doing something else. However, that would be highly unlikely. Despite all of that, next year, LeBron's going to be 36, 37 years old. Anthony Davis is going to be 1 year older. There's no telling if LeBron can keep this going year in and year out for the foreseeable future. How important is it to the Lakers to win this year?
I just looked this up because I have gotten LeBron James's age wrong too many times. And he is 35 this year. He will turn 36 midseason next, or possibly at the start of next season, you know, depending on how things go. But his birthday is December 30th. He'll turn 36. And I think for that reason, like, obviously, yeah, like it's really important for the Lakers to win this year. I mean, we've seen LeBron this year. And if you watch him this year, like he's had one of his most efficient seasons ever. He's been like, he hasn't been as good as like prime LeBron at the rim, but he's been a really efficient 3-point shooter. He's been like an incredible playmaker, the complete engine of this offense. And like, if you were to just watch him this year and not know his age, you'd be like, yeah, there's no way that guy's going to fall off next year. And I don't think that he's going to completely like fall off a cliff or anything, like barring injury. But yeah, like if he's going to be turning 36 at, you know, midseason next year, the start of next season, you know, however that's going to work, but like in December, like at some point you have to think that a decline is coming here for him. I think that it would be more of like a kind of a baby step back than it would be like a complete dropping off from where he is now. But you know, Anthony Davis is like, what, I think he's 26. Like it's been so long since I looked up these guys' ages, but like he still theoretically has a little bit of room to grow. The Lakers are going to, in free agency this year, at least in theory, have some more tools to kind of add to their team, and they're going to have a bunch of expirings at the deadline. So like, as long as LeBron maintains like somewhat close to his current level, even if he takes a little bit of a step back or he load manages a little bit, like I think that they still like, I originally, before this year got started, like, you know, when we were talking on podcasts in August and stuff like that, you know, me and like other Lakers bloggers and stuff, like I was predicting that next year would really be the year where like the Lakers kind of clicked, because they would have had the full mid-level exception, like they'd really have some tools to flesh out this roster depth. And now who knows what free agency and all that stuff and finances with the league are going to look like. I certainly don't. I don't think anybody really does at this point. But like, yeah, so for that reason, like it's really important for them to win this year. And, you know, I think that they're a little bit at a disadvantage in that they're an older team, and it's going to probably take them like, I'd say like a round to like get fully back into like game shape, if they can do that. Like, because, you know, they'll have the training camp, they'll have the warm-up game, so regular season stuff, whatever. But they're an older team, and so this may like take a little bit just for them to round back into the form that they were in. But like, I guess they're probably just having to hope that their chemistry carries them until that point, and like the quality of their opponent. But like, yeah, I mean, I think that it's really, really important for them to win this year. but I think that they still theoretically have like another year or two. I also think that it's not a foregone conclusion that Anthony Davis opts out after this year anymore, given that free agency is kind of going to be like insane. And like, we don't know how much money is going to be available. We don't know anything that's going to happen like with free agency and how all that's going to work with the cap and with how much revenue the league's going to lose from all of this stuff. So like, I think that there is at least an outside chance that he ends up opting in for one more year and trying to like deal with free agency the next year. So again, that's not me reporting anything. That's just like looking at the landscape. But yeah, I mean, like to go back to your question, it's really important for them to win this year. I just don't think it's like do or die.
Yeah, for sure. We know the New York Knicks are prepared to make a max offer for Anthony Davis this offseason, but you're right. Unless it's like a sign and trade situation, there are very limited teams that will even have that resource available to them, and even fewer that he would even consider in that circumstance. But we got to wrap it up. I am way over time. I apologize, you guys. I got so excited. This is Harrison Fagan. I don't know if I introduced him. He is the editor-in-chief for Silver Screen and Roll. He also has his own podcast. I'm going to look that up as I'm talking to you. We also have Ali Cosell. You can follow him at Ali Cosell. There it is. His podcast is Rewind Reconsider. So you guys make sure to check that out. Harrison, thank you for your time, sir.
No, I'm always happy to do it, guys. This was fun.
All right. And Ali Cosell, what you got coming up, Ali?
Well, I just posted some today. Please check it out, where basically I started looking at some numbers and I was astounded to see how a certain prototype of player, I mean, they're stars, but the taller stars in the NBA just flat out killed the New Orleans Pelicans defense. They had nobody that could stop them. So I wrote about that, and that's where I'm leaning towards my next piece is going to go as well. Looking on the free agent market, possible trades, how they can shore it up, because that's going to really improve the Pelicans from a team standpoint and hopefully in the wins and loss column.
Yeah, AD may have skewed those averages for you guys a little bit, though.
Man, I know, but seriously, LeBron was incredible. I mean, I'm sure you watch all the games, Harrison, but if you look at my article, you see that Luka, Kawhi, Giannis, Pascal Siakam, Tatum, 41 points in three quarters, Tobias Harris, Bogdanovich over in Utah, and Harrison Barnes. They all killed New Orleans this year.
Man, Anthony Davis was so bad in the clutch for us in 2018, 2019. And the first game we played against the Lakers, I think it was late November, if I recall, Jrue Holiday was having a monstrous first three quarters. And then he went for a dunk and he just got the rim. And then I think minutes after that, he inbounded right to Anthony Davis, who dunked off of it. It was some of the worst 6 minutes of my year.
he just needed a winning franchise to teach him how to win, you know? Okay. I'm not here to hate. I'm just letting you know. I think that's what happened.
You're a monster. Thank you guys so much for listening. I really appreciate it. We've got Nancy Lieberman coming up on Thursday, maybe Sean Kelly with her. If you guys haven't checked out our podcast yesterday with Cassidy Hubberth of ESPN. Again, if you guys like what you're hearing, please subscribe, please retweet, please spread the word. We appreciate your help so much. Let's dance and let's go Pels. Thank you for listening to The Bird Calls on the Armchair All-American Network. If you like what you're hearing, please take a moment to rate us on iTunes, retweet, share with your friends, and most importantly, subscribe today.